It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I've been to the Arctic many times, but last month is the first time I skied there, just over the tundra and ice outside of Barrow. It opened up the place to me. Alaska in the winter can get claustrophobic, especially in rural communities, where there's a lack of urban activities like shopping or movies. In Anchorage, skiing is my antidote to cabin fever, and it makes even more sense in rural Alaska. But not many people ski in the Arctic, and that doesn't make any sense. On today's show, I'll be talking to folks who enjoy rural skiing and who have taught it to others. It's happening in a big way these days, and as we'll hear in the second half of the show, for some hardy folks, it goes back decades. My first guests are part of a really cool program, which is bringing skiing to rural Alaska, both in the North Slope and like all over the place, and it's really, really grown fast. And so I've got two guests in the studio for this first half of the show. Lars Flora, who's director of the Ski-Ku Nordic skiing program, also Nana Nordic, and I guess the founder of it, right, Lars?
Yes.
And also a former Olympian.
Yep.
Yeah, that's okay to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And Elizabeth Rexford is a volunteer skier with the program. She grew up in Barrow and Fairbanks, is a Inupiaq and speaks a little bit of the language and sort of a newer skier, right?
Yes. I've been on skis for the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
I'm still learning.
But you're also teaching kids out in the villages?
Yeah. I'm just starting here with Ski-Ku and Nana Nordic, which is exciting. I think it is just a phenomenal group of instructors and high caliber skiers. And I like the energy and what they bring to the villages. And,
yeah.
And I have quite a few nieces and nephews in Barrow, and they loved the program this spring or last spring. So they call me once in a while and ask if I can go up there to go skiing with them again.
Awesome. So how did all this start, Lars? I mean, we think of, that Anchorage has got this amazing ski culture and so many people out there competing at the world level like you. But then there wasn't traditionally, we didn't like have this much connection to rural Alaska. And you don't think of cross-country skiing as being kind of a rural village thing.
Yeah. In 2011, I was skiing in Oslo at the World Championships, and there was about 100,000 people wrapped around an 8-kilometer loop.
Wow.
And so you're
skiing for an audience of 100,000, basically.
Yeah, and it was pretty
amazing.
Amazing, and it was one of the last big races I competed in. And after the race, I came back home, and I knew I was retiring from the sport. And I kind of needed to create the next chapter of my career. And so I kind of looked around Alaska and where we had skiers. And Anchorage, of course, has a lot of skiers and Fairbanks. And but there's snow everywhere and there's schools everywhere. And I've done a fair amount of school programs in the Anchorage area where we just go to schools and teach the kids. But it was never anything consistent. And a school is a perfect place to run a ski program because you have a population of kids and you have snow right outside the school. So in my opinion, it's the best way to get kids on snow because you have the skis at the school and then you walk outside and there's no transportation. And so a village is actually a perfect place to ski. And it's super fun because
you don't have to get in the car and drive to Kincaid Park.
The snow's right
there. Yeah.
And so a lot of times here in Anchorage, it's the hustle and the bustle of Anchorage life. And a village is... It's kind of nice because it's a little slower pace. And
well, it must have been interesting the very first time you were going out there wondering, well, I wonder how this is going to go over. What was that experience like?
So I had just come home from my competition season. I had 2.5 days to prepare for the trip. And I stayed up all night packing skis, and we took about 40 skis out to Kotzebue. And we drove a truck over to the school and unloaded the skis, and the PE teacher introduced us, and next thing we knew, we were out on the ice and skiing out on the sound, and it was pretty fun.
Cool. Had you had any experience teaching kids to ski before?
Throughout my career, we worked with kids and we worked with adults, and we did a lot of promotion with just one-day lessons. But my brother Eric is the coach.
He's the head coach at APU.
Yes, correct. And so he's the coach of the family. And I've learned a lot from Eric just being around him. And Eric and his coaches a lot of his coaches volunteer for the program. I think we have around 16 to 17 volunteers from APU.
Yeah, and you're in a lot of villages now.
Yeah, we're up to 40 villages.
That's amazing. I mean, that's such a huge amount of, like, organization just to make that happen.
Yeah, so most of my job is about logistics, just organizing 130 volunteers to travel around the state. And so we plan most of the year to, yeah, have a two-month ski season in the village.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, I mean, I have heard from people who've done this, and I've also was out in Barrow recently and talked to a PE teacher there, just about the excitement level that comes among the kids when the skis show up, you know. And I think that like probably kids are like hungry for some outdoor fun, right?
Oh yeah, of course. In the 8 North Slope villages that I've been to, yeah, there's Barrow, Anoktivik Pass, Akasuk, Kaktovik, Nuxit, Point Hope, Point Lay, and Barrow. And, you know, in all of the years that I had spent traveling the 8 North Slope villages through my past 2 jobs, a reoccurring theme was we need more activities for our youth, mm-hmm. and activities that can stay and that, you know, you don't need to bring a lot of outside. The skiers are going out there and they're coaching these kids, which is great. But activities that can stay within the communities, whether it's seasonal or year-round, there's just a huge need for more activities available for the youth. And after I'd moved to Fairbanks, there was a lot of resources and a lot of activities. And people say that in Fairbanks, there's really not much going on. Well, that's not true if you have a handful of very good coaches. And in my experience with good coaches, my first really good coach that I can think of was Coach Al Sakaitis, who was the men's basketball coach in Fairbanks. And having one or two really good coaches in a child's life can make a difference, mm-hmm. A very big difference, especially if it's a long tenured coach. Hopefully present in the communities out there. So from 5th grade up until we graduated from high school, we traveled most all summers to tournaments. And, you know, when you have one or two good coaches in each child's life, then they, you know, they're always checking up on the mm-hmm. on the kids, and they're asking about grades, they're asking about their home lives. And what comes to mind when talking, you know, when thinking about good coaches and mentors is during the AFN Elders and Youth Convention last year, one of my good friends was teaching and leading a workshop of youth, and she kept stressing that each child should have 5 mentors in their life. And she kept stressing and bringing up a lot of research that goes to show that when a child has at least 5 older people looking after them, you know, checking up on them, asking about their schooling, their family mm-hmm. life, and just how they're doing in general, about their friendships, and they just want to see that child succeed, then they have a huge advantage over those that only have 1 or 2.
Yeah. So skiing sort of creates another opportunity for that kind of connection.
Yeah, it creates an outlet of just for these children to, to expend all of their energy.
It must be neat for, you know, when you're in a village, not much happens. I mean, it's kind of quiet. Suddenly these like skiers who have like skied all over the world and are like have been in the Olympics show up to teach you a brand new sport. I mean, that must be a thrill for those kids.
Oh yeah, and I was in Barrow last year in April, and I looked over at the middle school and I said, "Whoa, what's going on out there?" And kids are, sliding or skiing down the hill off the side of the middle school, and all the entry elementary school kids, where my nieces and nephews are just excited. And it's not only that they're really high caliber skiers, it's that they're good coaches and they're passionate.
And they're generally fun young people.
Oh, they're fun, they're great. And we even took them out to, we had a group of skiers that Lars had brought out. I think there was 5 of you guys and we were out there on the ice breaking trail for 2 weeks. And it is a very hard and physically demanding 2 weeks in breaking trail. And we were just coming in the tail end of it. People had been out there for at least a few weeks working on the trails. And he comes in with 5 skiers, and after they had been volunteering at this
school. You're talking about breaking trail out to the whaling camp?
Yeah, out mm-hmm. to the edge of the ice.
So for people in Anchorage who don't know, the sea ice is very, very rough. And so to get to a whaling camp, you got to basically hack your way through these pressure ridges so you can get snow machines and sleds out there. And that is, it's like building a road almost.
Yeah, and you're getting skiers who've never experienced rural Alaska, at least some of them, in a way that, you know, the community members out there have. So it's a great cultural exchange, and they had a lot to offer too. They had only been out there for one day.
They're physically fit.
Oh my gosh, they are just, you know, they're tall, lean, and they don't look very strong, but once you get them, you know, you give them a pickaxe and they're just throwing, hauling chunks of ice around.
I mean, they believe they're strong.
Oh, yeah. And they kept going for hours. It was amazing.
So from your point of view, Lars, I mean, you must have had some amazing cultural experiences in the villages and new things that you've learned, as well as bringing new stuff out to them.
Yeah, for sure. Some of my favorite experiences are, I was out in Gamble during the Yupik Festival. That was one of my favorite moments of the last 4 years. Up in Barrow, we had the opportunity to help pull in a whale. That was amazing. Just watching a whole community get behind a project together, watching families come together. So that was amazing. Skiing between the villages has been super. That's been a really fun part for me. You get a, you know, you sit, you know, during the school day, you sit in on language classes. So a lot of times we're invited into the classroom and we're just there observing. And sometimes we talk to the kids and it's been super fun.
So I talked to one of your other coaches, Kalisa Kastning, about going up, and she went up with her husband, who's also a coach, and their 18-month-old. And then they skied between two villages, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, it seems like so hardcore. But really, maybe they're not. I mean, there may be places that might be 20 miles apart. Tell me about skiing between different villages.
Yeah, so my first ski was between Kotzebue and Kiana. Mm-hmm. And Dylan Watts and myself, we spent a week coaching in Kotzebue. And all the teachers knew what we were about to do. And so they made sure we had a sled and we had safety equipment. Uh-huh. And, you know, the Snow Machine Trail Network up in the Northwest Arctic is amazing.
Yeah.
There's a trail between every village that the region maintains. And it was, when we left the school, we were pretty nervous. And we skied over to Norvik and we stayed overnight. The principal let us in, we ate food. And then the next day we skied up to Kiana. And the skis they're unbelievable. Most of the time in April, it's sunny and nice and the snow's great, but you know, you're way out there and a storm can come in at any moment. So of course you can become very relaxed and you think it's pretty mellow, but at the same time, a storm can come in at any time. Most of the skis we do are one day. Mm-hmm. They range from anywhere from 12 miles up to 60 miles. So we skied from Kotzebue to Noatak, that was 63 miles. And two of my friends and I did that. And yeah, we skied between Norvik and Selawik. That's around 35 miles. And on that ski, we ran into around 2,500 caribou.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it's been a blast.
I mean, from a physical standpoint, that's like nothing for somebody like you who's actually raced routinely 50 kilometers very, very fast. So it's not like a physical challenge. It's sort of an adventure though.
Yeah, you know, it's really fun because you spend 5 days in the school coaching and you're on your feet for 8 hours a day. So you have PE classes
Exhausting. Makes you respect teachers, doesn't it?
Right. So we have PE classes for 45 to 60 minutes on average, and we just rotate kids on the skis. And so after school, we ski with the kids for about 2 hours. Usually around, if you have a school of about 150 kids, about 50 to 70 kids will show up after school. A lot of times we'll be run out of equipment, so the kids will be using one ski, for example, like a skateboard. And so you spend 5 days, and it's super inspiring and exhausting. And then on day six, you ski between the village. And so it's super fun, just the balance of working with the school and then going out there for yourself and going on this amazing adventure.
That is really, really neat. Hey, it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about Arctic skiing today, and in the studio with me right now are folks who have been helping with this program to teach skiing to kids in rural Alaska, more than 40 villages now, where they bring the skis and they bring coaches, some of whom are, you know, international competitors, to to bring this great sport to people who have plenty of snow but have not had much exposure to skiing. So we're hearing from Lars Flora, who's an Olympian and a pretty well-known skier in Anchorage, and he's also the director of the Skiku skiing group and Nana Nordic, which are two groups that are providing this service in different parts of Alaska. And then Elizabeth Rexford is also with me. She's a volunteer skier who grew up in Barrow and Fairbanks and hasn't been skiing for all that long. I mean, and I think that for some people, they'd be surprised that with all the snow out there in rural Alaska, there isn't more skiing, but you didn't pick it up until fairly recently, right?
Yeah, so I started a couple of years ago, and I feel like throughout my entire life, I've been extremely active in sports. And I firmly believe that when you involve children in physical activities and sports, or in team sports and also individual sports, then they have a lot more outlets. They have more mentorship. They have a lot more avenues to expend all of their energy and mm-hmm. to get outside. And also, one of my good friends, his father had mentioned, you know, when you're going through a hard time in life, just surround yourself something larger than yourself, which mm-hmm. means go outside, go hiking, hike.
Well, for me, that's the only thing that gets me through my week is skiing, because I get to, in the wintertime, you get the light, you get sort of get the blood moving through your body, and all the stresses and things that made you feel cruddy through the day just suddenly go away.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
That's why I ski.
Sure. And I just, another moment last week when my father was having a hard time with I have nine siblings. He's having a hard time with one of them. And I said, well, if you're getting stressed out, then go and rent some skis. I will hire a ski instructor for you, because it has a divine effect on people.
Uh-huh.
And it's just being outside and getting fresh air.
It's
and
medicine.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
But another, well, the main reason I had got involved in skiing in the beginning was one of my friends had invited me to take some skiing lessons with her. And when you're out skiing, and I can relate this to cycling here in Anchorage, is they're both expensive sports to get into. The biggest sport in rural Alaska by far is basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Every village I've gone to, which has been quite a bit, not as much as Lars, but basketball is always out there. It's always mm-hmm. a big sport. And all you need is a basketball and an open gym. In skiing and cycling, there's a lot more barriers to get involved. I have a nice bike, but I was only able to buy it after working 4 months offshore.
Yeah.
Then I had some extra money. So skiing, I got 40% off at the end of the season. And I waited till April because at the time I didn't have a lot of extra cash.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's all of these barriers to these two sports. But in the greater Anchorage area, you see a totally and completely different part of this town.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different people.
So much prettier,
Oh, it's beautiful. And it's a certain type of person that is drawn to skiing and cycling.
Yeah. So it's cruel that you've gotten the money to bring the skis and basically give them to the village. But the other thing is, folks are kind of giving their time, right? This is not a paid thing. This is where volunteer coaches are going out and maybe taking their 2 weeks of vacation from work to teach other people to ski. And that's really kind of beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. And after seeing them up there this spring, just the excitement mm-hmm. of the kids and, their eyes light up and they're out there, they're wanting to get outside and it's not, they're not just running or snow machining, but it's, they're out on skis and learning something new. And it's
so for the coaches, it's like a super energizing thing where you're connecting with happy kids and you're giving them something.
Oh, of course. It's similar to what I had seen. I'd coached the Native Youth Olympics for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And for a few years in a row, I was one of the top female athletes in the northern countries and in Alaska. And so we would travel. This was all volunteer work. It was a couple of hundred hours of volunteer work. But we traveled to the Anchorage area schools, which is over 20-some schools. And they'd send us out to the interior villages. And teachers more often than not would come up to me at the end of, when we had done an hour session with their class, and they said, you know what? So-and-so has not raised his hand once all year. And he was throwing his hands up and shouting out, and he was so excited to see someone like himself in school and teaching something that's more relevant to his experiences. And there's a lot of kids right now that are moving into Anchorage
mm-hmm.
from rural areas. There's a lot of kids that, in my volunteer experience, seeing that people move between each area, it's from the village into Anchorage. And if there's more bridges built that kind of, familiarizes themselves with the area, which skiing is great
mm-hmm,
and
totally.
Cycling and being involved
becoming
in
becoming part of
here.
The community. Yeah. So the other thing that people in Anchorage might not be aware of is that there's a real issue I mean, for every parent in Anchorage, there's an issue with getting your kids active because electronics are kind of taking over all of their time, right? Not getting outside. But it's also really a big issue in rural Alaska of getting kids and adults active and getting exercise, which we might not think about because it seems like, wow, it'd be an outdoor, outdoor culture. But having more stuff to do outside, I would think, would be really important. I mean, that there's something to do to go outside to use up your energy and do that in a village or in a hub community.
Oh, I completely agree. And what I've noticed is a lot of people in rural Alaska, and I'm kind of generalizing this, there's a lot very big obesity problem.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And just in my experience, if you're outside of a hub, then you don't have fresh food available to you.
Right.
A lot of it is canned. If you don't have nirpak or, your native foods, then a lot of what you're bringing in is canned. Just because once produce reaches the hub and then it gets the smaller
right.
communities, it's already, most of it's gone bad.
Right.
And so the food quality hasn't been as good as far as I've seen, but also the amount of physical activities that the communities are participating in. And I think I'm very happy and excited that this organization, along with other nonprofit and their funders, have been able to bring skis out there to at least get have the skis available for those.
And it's kind of like Johnny Appleseed going around and planting the seeds everywhere, right? You don't have to keep doing it every year. I mean, it'd be nice if you could go to every village every year, but you're getting a whole new generation who's going to have this activity.
Oh, sure. And I would like to see more native people out on skiing. And I thought about this in cycling, too, when I showed up to races. And I looked around. It was mostly older, no offense, but, white people.
Guys who look like me.
mostly retired people who had a lot of time and money on their hands. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, well, where's the brown people?
Yeah, for sure.
And same with skiing, and I love it. I've been going to Kincaid, and I look around, too, and I'm like, man, we have such a big state, much snow out there, and a lot of rural native people. And I'd like to see more people coming in, at least if they're coming in for college or school, to be able to compete at a higher level.
Yeah, that's so true, Lars. I mean, and I just think about ski races here in Anchorage, and it's a great community, and I love being there, and I love all the people, but you have very few minority faces. I mean, it's really, really pretty much just people look like you and me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to the entry into the sport, like Elizabeth was saying. The price point just to get a pair of skis.
Right.
And so we've built a really good relationship with some ski companies. And so we're able to purchase the skis at a highly discounted price.
Oh, great.
A lot of times people will donate skis as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 1,000 skis in circulation right now, and we donate around 30 to 50 sets to every school that we go to. And then when we go back to the school the following year, we replace the broken skis.
I bet there are a lot.
Yeah, and so the way we look at this is, to get new people into the sport, we have to provide the skis and the boots, because it is hard for a lot of families today to, if you have two or three kids, and to buy $300 to $400 skis every year.
Or 10 kids.
I went through that myself. Yeah. It's just really expensive as they grow and getting new skis. And here in Anchorage, we have Junior Nordic, where you can pay a fairly reasonable fee, for an activity, and you can rent the skis, but that's pretty unique. And even that, for a lot of people would be a challenge to pay for.
Right.
So, and I'm sure you learned to ski from your dad, who I've seen out on the trails and is a terrific skier, right?
Well,
so, generational in some families.
My whole family skis, and I have two brothers who I chased around when I was younger, and I didn't even really realize it, but I was basically chasing them at the age of 10 and starting to train for the Olympics. And little did I know, just by being around my brothers, I had this amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
And my mom is actually the one who we credit for introducing the whole family.
Uh-huh.
She taught my dad, and my mom is from Norway.
Uh-huh.
And so she taught my dad. My dad learned how to ski when he was 28, and now he's 74. And he skis every day, and my mom skis every day. They just got back from a trip in Washington, so they went down there and raced a little bit. And yeah, so it's been a big family sport for us. We grew up every weekend going skiing.
Maybe hopefully are spreading it to a lot more people. So how does this work exactly where's the money come from, and where does the people power come from to make all this work? Because to teach all these kids all over the state, I mean, if it was sort of like a government program, you'd think it would cost millions of dollars to do this, to get people to like 40 different villages and teach, you know, programs to hundreds and thousands of kids, I guess.
Yeah. So the first year we ran the program, we went to 4 villages, and Nana sponsored the event, and that's why it was called Nana Nordic. And in the 11 villages of the Nana region, we went up there and started the program in 4 villages, and Nana provided a little funding. And then we collected Alaska Airline miles, and we took care of all the travel, and then the ski companies provided the equipment. So we were actually on a shoestring budget. Mm-hmm. It was done out of super low budget program. And as we continued, we realized if we're really going to make this sustainable, we had to form a nonprofit and really go for it. So I had a little experience from just being a skier. You have to raise money to travel the world.
And sponsorships and all that, yeah.
And Robin Cornfield at Nana Development is the president of the nonprofit. And she and I spend most of the year raising funds. And so a lot of the oil companies have sponsored it. Shell was a big sponsor. ConocoPhillips has been a sponsor. BP. And Arctic Slope Community Foundation has provided the funding on the slope. So that's been an amazing partnership and a key partnership. and so really Nana and Arctic Slope has been the big players.
Mm-hmm. And so that funding is then going to buy plane tickets and you know, pay for skis, discounted skis, and maybe the salaries for the people who are running it, and then the coaches are volunteers.
Yeah, yeah. We have about 130 volunteers.
Wow.
We have 2 paid employees. We run a biathlon program as well.
Right.
So we teach a lot of the kids about biathlon, and that's the sport of shooting and skiing.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring in laser systems, and they're amazing systems. We buy them from Finland.
And you take those out to the rural Alaska as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that must be popular.
Yeah, it's super fun. So a lot of times we set them up in the gym, and the kids have the opportunity to practice biathlon. And I didn't grow up with biathlon, and I've learned a lot from our coach, Zach Hall. And Zach is the biathlon expert.
Yeah, I've had Zach on the show within the last month or two. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I can imagine that would be very welcome, where shooting is such an important part of life, to have that as a sport. And I would think that the people in the community would be very welcoming to the coaches who are coming in.
Yeah, I think it just gives the kids another opportunity to, we do a little gun safety when we take out the laser systems, and the coaches provide a safe, controlled way to introduce the sport. And
So if listeners are out there thinking, wow, this is amazing, I want to help, are you looking for volunteers? I'm sure you're always looking for donations. What kind of help are you seeking?
Yeah, we're always looking for volunteers. We're about 80% full on our trips.
Mm-hmm.
Our trips start March 3rd in the Cuspuck School District, so Antioch and Kalskag area.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone can go to skiku.com online application and sign up. We're always looking.
And then they're not going to get paid, but they're going to get to go out to rural Alaska and have this amazing cultural experience.
Yeah, right? You know, there's definitely that whole thing about we're providing the service to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe the volunteers are learning as much,
yeah.
And myself included. It's definitely a two-way street, and we've had volunteers from New York, Wisconsin, Utah. First time to Alaska, and they step into a village.
How cool. All right, well, we'll have all that on our website at alaskapublic.org. Just click on today's show about Arctic skiing. And I want to thank both of my guests, Lars Flora, director of SkiKu. Thanks for being with us, Lars.
Yeah, thank you.
And Elizabeth Rexford, who's a volunteer skier. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats next Thursday at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Well, for the second half of the show, I've got a guest who I think is going to be really fun, and you're going to enjoy this conversation. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. My guest is Jim Vorderstrasse, former Barrow mayor, now lives in Anchorage. You've probably seen him around town riding a weird recumbent bicycle because that's one of his big things. And I think that we're going to do a future show with Jim just on recumbent bicycles because that is, it turns out it's a really interesting subject. I'd never done it until he introduced me to it just recently. But Jim is also skiing in Barrow way before the Nana Nordic or the Ski Coup program started and introducing kids to skiing and has spent a lot of time out on the tundra skiing and really loves the Arctic as I do. Thanks for being here, Jim.
My pleasure, Charles.
So what got you first skiing when you were living in Barrow?
I learned how to ski in the Army in Fairbanks, and I still remember the first time I went out with cross-country skis, the Army issue with bunny boots, and my buddy and I were skiing along the...
Those big old wooden skis.
Oh, yeah. Right? The Chena Slough, it was like 30 below, and the sun had just come up, and the ice crystals were... And it was magical. Uh-huh. And we're rolling along, and then we get to this little hill. Got to the top of the hill, and I looked down, and I said, oh, my gosh. I was petrified because I am 6'5". But I remember getting down that hill. It's also clear in my mind, but I loved it and skied Birch Hill.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And after I got out of the Army, I got a job up at the Naval Arctic Research Lab in Barrow. Uh-huh. And I got some skis and I'd go out and just, you know, flatland skiing. But it's great. And it's as you well know, it's just something you get this... A great workout, and it does something when you got all that blood pumping to your brain and nothing to concentrate on.
Yeah,
you know,
it clears you out. So, and I did you like fall in love with Barrow with the Arctic right away when you got up there?
Yeah, I did. I got up in May of '73, and so it was summertime, and it was such a neat place. You're right on the edge of the ocean, which was magical in that sense. And my roommate at the Quonset hut I was Jim Dalton, huh, who the Dalton Highway is named after. And he was in his 70s then. And he introduced me to my wife, Edith Edwardson, at that time, and built a home up there in 75. And Edith and I would go out jogging in the summer, and in the winter we were pretty good about going skiing every night. We just go out the back door and do a loop around the airport. You know where I'm talking about.
Totally, you've been to Barrow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And come back and, you know, do 40 minutes of workout. It was a workout, uh-huh. But it was a good workout. And we had headlamps and the whole nine yards, and it was just great. And so
I'm guessing there weren't too many other people skiing up there. In,
you know,
the 70s.
I don't remember any, but then I was active in the Chamber of Commerce. We got the Spring Festival going in the early 80s, and we got some ski races going. And I used to do a community event on Saturdays. We'd just go out skiing with a bunch of adults, and we go up to the Million Dollar Hill, which they call that big mountain.
Big mountain. It's like west 20 of feet tall.
Yeah. Well, now it's been cut down because they needed the fill. But back then, we'd climb up the mountain and zip down. That was a big thing. And the bluffs.
And for people who don't know, I mean, it's a tableland. I mean, it's so amazingly flat. You can't tell in the wintertime if you're on the ocean or if you're on land or if you're on a lake or if you're on tundra.
That's
it's
true.
Totally flat.
That's true. And then, Joff Carroll, who a wildlife biologist there for many years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, friend
of mine. He was a enthusiast. And
he's still up there.
You know, I like to introduce Joff as the man who skied around the world because, you know, he skied to the North Pole with the Will Steiger expedition.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, we've got to get Jeff on the show because that's an incredible story about skiing from north tip of Ellesmere Island to the actual North Pole.
And he was a last-minute addition to the expedition, and he ended up, and Joff never told me this. I had to read it in the book, North to the Pole, I believe, by Will Steiger. Joff ended up kind of being, you know, the trailblazer.
Yeah,
and they got to the
tough.
North.
He's a really tough guy.
Oh, really? Yes, he is. And he got to the North Pole, and they were all celebrating, planting the flags, and Joff's out there skiing. They go, what is he doing? You know, and he's going around in a great big circle. And he got back to where he started. He goes, yes, I skied around the world. I thought that's great.
Yeah, he told me that story about, you know, 70 degree below weather and eating butter sticks for every meal and just
the
frozen sleeping bags, frozen faces. Yeah.
So
you're skiing with Joff.
Skiing with Joff, and one time I brought a kite down. I just discovered traction kites. I had a 3-meter trainer with a bar, and I'd been playing around with it. I didn't have an instructor, so, you know, it's one of those deals. I read the instructions. Uh-huh. I'm out there 20 below trying to fly this thing, and I finally got it down, and, you know, I could get going with the cross-country skis, and it was a hoot. And I got Joff on there one day, and he'd never tried it, and gave him the fundamentals. And all of a sudden, boom, he caught a gust and off he goes. And I'm going, I'm trying to keep up with him. Uh-huh. He's gone. And he gets up. And I thought, gosh, I hope he doesn't get up there in those poles up there at the Pollock Elementary. Sure enough, he got up there, but he was able to maintain the kite so it didn't get tangled up. But
wow, that shows some talent.
Oh, yeah. It was great. But yeah, cross-country skiing, I tried to, I was on the city council in the 80s, and I tried to get the city to invest in skis for the kids. I thought it'd be a great thing, but it was kind of tough. And finally I did get them to invest in some skis, but I didn't really have anybody to push the project. And mm-hmm. So like 10 years later, when I got to be the mayor, one of the first things I did was I took the
so
former,
this would be the 90s.
Yeah, it'd be 95.
Mm-hmm.
I took the former mayor's travel budget and I bought 30 or 40 pairs of cross-country skis, boots, and poles for kids, and then we build on that. And we already had but I believe at one time we had over 100 pairs. And there again, the staff didn't—they wanted to make sure they got them back, so they were charging like $50 fee, and it didn't work because the kids, you know, they want to go out. So I changed it when I got in there. All they had to do is leave their shoes behind. So we did get a few pairs of old tennis shoes. But to me, it was worth it to get those skis out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't
and there's
know.
There's no ski shop. Nobody's going to go out and buy their own.
No. And, you know, you have to get them from down Fairbanks or Anchorage. But we had an active program, and I always made myself available to take out classes. Teachers would want to reward their classes or just get them outside.
Uh-huh.
And that was the thing that I felt was important, that people need to get outside. They got to learn to dress for it and not wear cutoffs and t-shirts to school. You know, you got to wear the gear, because if you got the gear, it's great. Layers, and you can.
Well, this is something, you know, people from down south think about us who live in Anchorage and think, oh, Alaska, you know, it must be so cold. I'm like, well, we're indoors and then we can put on coats. But then people in Anchorage sort of have the same mindset about the Arctic, thinking, oh, you know, you must, it's dark all the time and you must just be indoors all the time. Not so.
No, no. In fact, I read an article once that Barrow has more sunlight than any other spot on in the United States. And part of it, I don't know if it was to do with the dusk or how that could be, because I've never really thought too heavily about
right.
it. But of course, we get a lot of sunlight that we never appreciate.
Well, there's no mountains blocking it.
That well, that's that true. And we do have a dry climate. It's kind of changing with this global climate change. But so we're getting a little more moisture now, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get, I think the Barrow's precipitation is 6-7 inches. So oftentimes we would have hard packed wind drifted
snow. Which is similar to like the desert.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the sand in the desert. So one of the things I did, I got a grooming machine, and the fella I bought it from, I went on the internet, he'd been to Prudhoe Bay and worked. So he was down in Washington or maybe Montana, or I forget where it was at, but he sold me this trailer. We'd pull behind a snow machine and it had the little tillers up front that would break the snow up and then channel it back, and it had the tracks that we'd set. Mm-hmm. And oh my word, it was perfect. And I
loved
that.
That was sweet the first time you did that.
Oh gosh.
And after years and years of skiing on the rock hard tundra.
And I've always been a Nordic style. I did buy a pair of skate style skis once, but unless you have really groomed stuff, it doesn't work. In fact, I snapped them going across a rut one time.
And when I was up there skiing a couple of weeks ago, I tried to do some skating, and what I found, number one, the snow is very, very dry and you don't get a good glide,
right?
Which you kind of need for skating. And the other thing was, because it was never really bright out, I mean, the sun never came above the horizon, you couldn't pick out the dips and stuff in the snow.
Exactly.
And so it was really hard to skate when one second you'd be falling in a hole, and next second you'd hit a little ridge and stuff.
That's right.
Because we you know, it's not, people think it's like 100% dark for 60 days. Well, no.
It's not.
It's not. There's a little twilight, and you can see your way around.
Sure, sure. And it's great to get out in that twilight. And we used to have a thing I called Ski the Lagoon at Noon. And it was more or less for adults, but they'd come over to the city hall and right next to the lagoon, and I'd lead this 40-minute run around the lagoon. And I introduced people that hadn't skied before and people that just wanted the exercise. Instead of eating a big meal, they'd go out and, you know, try to get skinny, which I've never did, but I had a lot of fun out there with everybody. And
so you started grooming
started
a loop?
Started grooming the trails, and ironically, snow machiners discovered it. Hmm. And especially the kids, you know, because a lot of kids recreate on snow machines up there, and they get out there and they rooster tail, and unfortunately, it often tore up the trail, but it still was good to, you know, to have a groomed area. And, you know, oftentimes I'd go out on a Saturday. I pulled my own with my own snow machine and would go around the lagoon, and sometimes I'd go out further. But, yeah, I'd come back to go skiing on it, and somebody had already beat me to it on a snow machine. But still, even with a snow machine, it broke up the drifts and stuff, so it was skiable. So that was fun. And I don't know if they're still using that. I hope so. It's still at the city, I'm sure. But
I didn't see any evidence of it when I was there. I mean, they did have a shack by the rec center with a bunch of skis and boots. And for $5, you could rent a pair of skis for the day. And
good. Did you rent a pair? Did you find a pair?
I did.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. And I had fun. And
so the program's still going. It still lives.
It still lives. I think that the APU or the Nana Nordic Ski Crew group, which was Lars Flores' group from the last half hour of the show, has gone up and provided a lot more skis. And then they've brought the kids out from the school to teach them to ski. I talked to the PE teacher at the Ipaluk Elementary School, and he was super enthusiastic.
Because good for him.
To have these international racers show up and take the kids out is just hugely popular. And getting kids outside is a big deal everywhere, but especially, I think, in rural Alaska.
I agree wholeheartedly. And you learn to love the area. And I mean, you love being outside. And I think it becomes aware of what's going on. Because the Arctic, as you well know, is kind of the having the brunt of this global warming, however it's caused. It's happening.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it in Barrow in the last 30 years I've been there. Mm-hmm. And my house is on piling up there, so I kind of worry about that sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. The ground is turning into mush.
It's thawing, I believe, at one point, it was thawing an extra inch every year because they were monitoring it. And I thought, well, let's see. I hand dug those original house pilings to 5 feet. So three feet of that's the active layer, so you got 2 feet where you're frozen in. But anyway, that's...
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I'm talking to Jim Vordestrasse, who has a lot of interesting topics to talk about. The particular one we're talking about today is Arctic skiing. Jim was the mayor of Barrow, lived there for decades, did a lot of skiing in the Arctic and teaching other people to ski, and just started doing some reminiscence here and talking about sort of what it's like to be up there in Barrow. So it sounds like you were teaching kids to ski too.
Yeah, I do get them out there, and we had a little slope behind the city hall there. And one of my favorite things is I'd show them the pizza. Here's how you turn. You make little pizzas, and then get them up there on that hill, and we go down. And I would always get, I feel good when you get going down there. You know, you get a little downhill. I'm sure many of the kids remember that.
Yeah.
But I had a ball with them, and it was so much fun. And, you know, with adults, too, I'd get them out. And it's just important to really take advantage of the snow we've got. And when you were talking about the international people we get, I know Fairbanks, where I'm still have some connections in Fairbanks, and Birch Hill is where I learned to downhill ski with Army skis.
Yeah, I've been on that slope.
Yeah, and now, you know, they used to bring Olympic people up there to train, and even here at Kincaid, but... I'm thinking, as you're talking, I'm thinking, gee, I wonder how long it's going to be before the only snow's up in the Arctic. They got to go to the Arctic to train, you know?
I try not to think that way. Well, discouraging. It's pretty discouraging.
I was just down in Oregon, and they got dumped down there. They got a ton of snow there, which they've had some rough years with the ski facilities down there. Mm-hmm. But they got, gosh, all kinds of snow. So there's still hope, Charles.
All right.
And then we could always go to the East Coast, I guess.
Yeah, right. It's Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
So it sounds like skiing was really not part of Native culture at all.
Well, I don't know that it was in Barrow. Of course, you had driftwood.
No, I've heard,
I've seen skis made out of, or I mean, sleds made out of baleen. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anybody ever came up with the skis, but it would have been a great way to travel.
Yeah, you think so.
A lot of walking.
My friend Richard Glenn was mentioning that Oliver Levitt was a skier at one time. I don't know if he still is. He was and that he actually used a sail to scoot around.
Well, that is news to me. Now, really? Oliver never shared that one with me. But
he didn't look like a skier.
Well, he was quite the athlete in his younger days.
Was he? Yes. Okay.
So I wouldn't surprise me because, you know, my wife's grandfather came from Norway. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he, you know, and that makes me wonder. I'm going to have to ask her, has she ever heard? Because he'd already passed before she was born, but I'd be interested. He was involved with the rescue of Eielson and Wilkins when they crashed their airplane on the Arctic Ocean.
Wow.
He has a piece of property at Beachy Point, which is like 10 miles from Prudhoe Bay. He actually was interested in oil way back then. And but my wife's mother's father, Ned Nusinginya, was Wilkins's ground man in Barrow. And they would clear the runway. He'd organize a group of guys to clear the runway. And these guys, Wilkins and Eielson, crashed out there, and they were out like for 2 weeks or 10 days. I can't remember.
Out on the sea ice.
On the sea ice, and they came back, and Al Hobson Sr., who was Eben Hobson's father, he come out and met him with the dog team. And there's questions whether he found them or they found them. You know, the great white explorer didn't want to admit that they got rescued by the local guys, but that's the inside story.
That's what usually happens, yeah, because those guys know what they're doing out there.
And they came to Edwardson Cabin, and that was where Ned Nusinginya and my wife's grandfather on her father's side, Anton Edwardson, were both mentioned on the same page. I was all excited. I go, wow, this is history, you know?
Yeah.
It was... Years later, they reenacted that flight, and I had an apartment that was vacant, so I let these pilots stay there. And they had the Explorer flag from that original flight in 1930, and on there was Edwardson's. I don't think Ned signed it, but Edwardson was on there.
Wow,
that was neat to see the actual, and we brought my in-laws over.
If you don't mind my saying, like moving to Barrow in 1973, you're part of history now because so much has changed.
right.
In that 40-year period.
They just formed the North Slope Borough in 72, and the native land claims has more or less been settled by then, so I missed
71
out on
is when that passed,
yes.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting to see the development in Borough. And
oil had not, the pipeline hadn't been built yet?
No. And in fact, I worked for the Department of Labor, and I sent a lot of people over to the pipeline. I never worked on it myself. I actually did some work in Prudhoe later, after it was developed, but it was quite a time in Barrow, and it's tremendous changes. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So it seems like, I'd just be interested in your perception of how the outdoors, really people's relation to the outdoors has changed over that 40-year period, because I have the impression that there was more subsistence, more outdoor activity in those days.
Oh, sure. There's no question about it. I think before they had natural gas, they had to go out and gather firewood. And in fact, the beaches had been cleaned for miles because of, you know, people needed wood to burn. They didn't have natural gas. And I think it was 64, the Navy finally brought the, and I don't quote me on that, but it's in the 60s sometime that they get natural gas to the village. And of course, that made life quite a bit easier.
Yeah,
to have a warm house in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they used to have all the pipelines above ground, so that was kind of tough with skiing or snow machining, because you had this grid of exposed pipes that you had to step over or get around. And
well, when I was up in Barrow, I met this really nice couple who had loved skiing and had
David Ongley. Is mm-hmm. that who you're talking about? Yeah. I read your article.
David and, sure. and Lisa Sabiniak, and I'll put a link to that on our website at alaskapublic.org. They love skiing so much that they actually skied out to have their wedding, and they had it in a place where the gas pipeline has a little arch so that you
sure.
can go underneath it, because
yeah.
that's the only way you get across
exactly.
the gas pipeline, and it sort of made a little bit of an arbor or something, like sort of an industrial type.
Right.
And sort of that's like, you, when you live out there, you kind of... improvise. You make things work.
Sure. And that's neat that they're doing that. I know Dave well, and we worked together when I was the mayor and he was a librarian there. And the library used to be in the city facilities before they built a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of the library. I listen to audiobooks.
Yeah.
Have you tried that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, good.
So the did skiing really catch on in the native community as much as in the non-native community?
I don't think it ever really caught on too much, and I feel like I kind of failed there because I didn't organize races. I think, you know, kids want to race, and I get a kick out of that because I was just down in Oregon with my parents, and I went out. They got a beautiful bike trail down there that's paved, and here's these kids on training wheels riding along, and I come along my recumbent with a fairing on and all this, and I said, and I had the horn, you know, and I'm blowing that, and I said, "Hey, man, I've been looking for somebody to race," and this little guy in front took off like a shot, you know.
Uh-huh, right.
Here he'd just been dawdling along, but when the race came up, boy, he was ready to roll.
Yeah, really.
And in fact, his dad's going, "Come back here, come back." He's chasing me.
Uh-huh.
So it was funny. But yeah, I think the racing aspect would have been maybe, because it always did at the spring festival, people would come out and race, and it's just, I'm just not that. You know, I played basketball. That was my competitiveness there.
And yeah, yeah. No, and for kids, yeah, that maybe is a motivation to get them out. And it sounds like Lars, with his program, is starting to develop some
racers.
That's
wonderful.
And some communities around the state are getting into it. Although just giving kids like that lifelong activity that is available to them is huge.
Right. It is.
They didn't even know about it before.
That's what I hope that I did, maybe instill that in a few kids up there that... Maybe they haven't taken it up yet, but they know how to do it. They know how simple it is. You just go out there, and it's not like you're going to go down Alyeska Black Diamond, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to be out there just moving along. And
well, that was the thing that struck me, is that I wonder if you would have had an easier time in a place with hills. Because most people think of, like, hills as being part of the fun part of skiing, and
exactly.
It's dead flat. That's not so great.
And see, that's the thing. Being somewhat eccentric, my wife would say, I downhill ski, but I always thought it was so, you know, you got to stand in line, take the thing up, and it just wasn't as real as cross-country skiing.
Cross-country skiing, you're skiing the whole time.
You're skiing the whole time, and you go out on these trails, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah,
I say enough about it. And I'm missing it, this doggone weather we're having.
Yeah, me too. And there's the exploratory part of it, too, out there when you're not really that worried about a trail. Go any direction you want, and so you're getting some people can... and get all their exercise on a treadmill or stationary bike. And then, like, for me, like 10 or 15 minutes of that, I'm so bored, I want to go nuts.
I know.
But when I'm on skis, I could go for hours. Because
you can't.
And even though the Arctic is just flat white, the sky is always changing.
Yes.
The sort of the world around you is like gradually changing. It's a very beautiful place.
Well, and you know, the perception there is different. And I can still remember, I used to carry a gun, you know, a weapon when I'd go out because they're polar bear.
Sure.
But if I was going to stay on the land, I wasn't so concerned about it. And mm-hmm. I can remember one day I went out without a weapon by myself, and I'm listening to KBRW on my headset, skiing along, and all of a sudden I see some motion. I go, ooh, what's that? Oh, my gosh, that's a polar bear. And I'm just, you know, the adrenaline's pumping. And yeah. I'm going, oh, man. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't have anything. So I'd heard the tale of the elderly lady that was out one time, and a polar bear came upon her, and she had a stick, and she took her mitt, put it on the end of the stick, and shoved it. When the polar bear charged her, she shoved it down his throat in the open mouth, and I thought, well, maybe that's what I'm going to have to try to do.
Wow.
But fortunately, it was just an Arctic fox. And, you know, it'd come into, you know, and I go,
oh, that's a great ending to the story.
Yeah, and I'm going, but then I started thinking, you know, we've had a rabies up there, and I'm thinking, oh, gosh, if this thing has rabies, maybe I can handle it. But so that's my nightmare, Charles, and I'm out skiing in the dusk, and I'm coming across the lagoon there, and all of a sudden I see a shadow move, and oh, my gosh, so my wife is woken me up more than once going, I'm fighting off. I mean, I'm trying to stand up to this polar bear.
Well, I mean, and polar bears are such exotic animals, but I've seen tons of them up there, and in whale camp, I have had the situation similar to what you're talking about, where you kind of look up and, oh my gosh, the polar bear, which is almost invisible.
Right.
Suddenly it's not that far away from you.
And they will stalk you.
I think that I have been stalked by a polar bear. Yeah. And they have eaten people. Unlike most bears, they actually wouldn't mind us for a snack.
Yeah. Point Lay had an event several years back.
But. Yeah, I wrote about that as a reporter back in the 90s. Yeah. Terrible, sad story about a guy protecting his
pregnant wife.
We don't have to worry about that at Kincaid Park, but we do have, like, might
moose.
Be a mugger.
Or moose.
Yeah, or a moose.
I've run into some, what's the hill that is called Moose Hill, I think, part of the Kincaid Loop, and I went around there one day. I must have seen half a dozen moose in that just short little ride, and I says, oh, this is why they call this Moose Hill, evidently.
The place is crawling with them.
Yeah.
Well, this has been really fun. We're already out of time, but I've really enjoyed having you in, Jim, and I want to get together again to do a show on recumbent bikes, because that is a fascinating and fun topic.
It is, and I got to share something. My friend Dave Hoffman was in Barrow, and he just got in the internet, and he says, hey, Jim, come on in here. I want to show you this internet. And we went in, he says, what are you interested in? I said, well, what about recumbents? And he says, okay. So he got on this chat line and he typed in, does anybody know anything about recumbents? And the very first reply I ever got off the internet was, recumbents rule. Can you believe it?
There you go.
So,
all right. Well, thanks. Jim Vorderstrasse has been with me talking about Arctic skiing. And Jim is here in Anchorage, but lived many, many years in Barrow and was a mayor of Barrow. Earlier, we heard from Lars Flora and Elizabeth Rexford talking about the Ski Coo program and Nana Nordic program, where they're taking skiing out to the villages. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our production assistant is Grace Bojean. She helps line up the guests. My name is Charles Wolforth. Thanks for being with us. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.